6:35, and I am bringing the November 7th, 2012 Writers Advisory Council meeting to order. First up is the public comment period. Do we have anyone here today to speak to us? Seeing no hands and hearing nothing from John, I'm going to take that as a no. Next up on the agenda item is the approval of the agenda. Can I get a motion to approve today's agenda? Ben?
Second.
Carl, great. And let me just take a vote on that motion. All in favor of the agenda, please raise your hands. Great. Any opposed to the approval of this agenda as it is? None. Great. Approval of past meeting minutes. We actually don't have the minutes, so we're going to skip that agenda item. Hopefully, we will have that for you at the next meeting, if not sooner. Great. So running right along here to agenda item 5. We have the bus stop livability grant. We have Al Hines from the Office of Bus Planning here at Metro here to speak to us. Mr. Hines, welcome. And let me preface by just being very bold and saying, please, please, please let us know what it is that you want to hear from us at the end of your presentation. We want to make sure that we leave here giving you the most useful information possible. So please don't be shy.
Okay, okay. Well, basically I'm here today to just give everybody a brief overview of where we're headed with some bus stop improvement grants that we have. First of all, in 2011, we received a new Freedom grant to do bus stop improvements, and we've actually done work with the Accessibility Advisory Committee on this grant. What this new Freedom grant was is $1.5 million to improve about 50 bus stops we approximated. The requirements of this grant program specifically was that it must benefit customers with disabilities. So that's why we chose to coordinate with the Accessibility Advisory Committee on this particular grant. What we did as part of this grant process is since we obviously had a list of many more stops than we had money to pay for improvement, we established a process to come up with some ranking criteria so we could take a look at all the stops that were submitted for recommendation for improvement and then apply this ranking criteria to that grant and come up with a selection of 75 stops. So this slide here just goes through what the requirements were based on the application that we turned in. That we were looking at stops with this particular grant program that had specific requests that were made to the ADA office. So that basically somebody comes into the office on the other side of this floor and they say that they would like to use Metro bus service, but they have a particular problem at the stops that they're trying to use. So if we could make improvements to those stops, they would be able to use the Metro bus service. And then there were some requirements based on, census and demographic information that we had to apply, to comply with the federal requirements. And we also applied saying that we can also use common destinations to and from those census tracts, knowing that just improving bus stops in the in the census tracts with the demographics that complied with the grant didn't mean that the people were making trips just within those tracts. So we would also have to make improvements to their trip origin and destinations as well. And we also cited the need to make improvements on our priority and high frequency line. So the next, this is basically, we sat down with the Accessibility Advisory Committee and our jurisdictional stakeholders and came up with ranking criteria on what items were most important to us when making these improvements to the bus stops and selecting these bus stops for improvement. So as part of this process, what came out of it was the bus stops that were requested by customers with disabilities or near their, the locations where they live came up with very important criteria, is the most important criteria for us when selecting those 75 stops that we were actually going to make improvements with this particular grant program. And then you can see that there were other items that ranked of lesser importance, such as the ridership of the stop, whether it was on a priority corridor, and the significance of need of the improvements of the stop, and whether we could easily make those improvements, like what, you know, just some of these stop improvements require a lot of right-of-way that's not available and stuff like that. So some of them are just physically impossible to construct without the jurisdiction being willing to take right-of-way to make it happen. Moving on to the next slide. So out of this process, the 75 stops that we selected, you can see the breakdown of how those stops broke down: 45 from the District of Columbia, 17 in Prince George's County, 7 in Arlington, 3 in Alexandria, and 3 in Fairfax. And just a note on this, Montgomery County declined this grant assistance because Montgomery County has done an exceptional job on their own of making these bus stop improvements, and they actually found $7.5 million, I think it was back in 2004 and 2005, to take on a bus stop improvement program in Montgomery County. So basically what they're saying is there's not a whole lot of work left to do in Montgomery County, and the stops that are still remaining in Montgomery County are programmed in that program that they've already established. So it's not that there's, you know, not that we're ignoring them, it's that they've done such a good job of making those improvements already that there really isn't much need in Montgomery County. Okay, so that was the history on the New Freedom Grant program. So what we're looking for today is, we also have this bus livability grant program that we received funding for in 2012. And the criteria for the bus livability program is not quite the same as the New Freedom Grant program. Whereas the New Freedom Grant program was a program that was targeted specifically at people with disabilities, the bus livability program is a federal program that's targeted at making improvements for all bus riders. So, if, you know, we don't have to specifically target this grant just to making improvements for people with disabilities, though that's probably still an important part of this program. It's not the sole purpose of this program. So that's why we wanted to come talk to you today, because we felt for, as far as having an advisory group that sort of helps guide our criteria that we want to grade these stops at, that for this program, which reaches out to everybody, we thought that this group might be the more appropriate guiding group versus the Accessibility Advisory Committee, because this group speaks to all of our Metro bus riders and not just representing a small subset of that Metro bus population. But for this grant, we have a slightly larger budget than the previous grant, but not by a whole lot, about another $150,000 or so. $300,000 of this grant we identified to use for this process to develop the criteria and make ratings at the stops that are submitted, so we can develop the list of the stops that we can make improvements at. And we're estimating that we'll actually have money to construct 66 of these bus stops once we're all said and done. So moving forward with this grant, what we're trying to do is reach out to the public to revise the criteria that we used in that previous grant to make it more reflective of the needs of all Metro bus riders, you know, we're looking for public input on that, and then after we receive public input, we're also looking for some help from you all to adopting that criteria and allowing us to move forward with that stop selection. And what we're working on right now is actually developing what that public participation process will look like. Some of the ideas that we've floated around for the public participation process is trying to use some online tools to let people know, you know, to give us, take surveys to rank different criteria, to help give us input on that. But then we're also looking at ways to get out in the community and also allow people to provide us that feedback on which criteria are most important to them when we rank these bus stops. And also as part of that process as well, we're trying to solicit comments for, we want to make sure that we get the word out there for everybody to submit any bus stop that they want us to consider with this criteria, because there's a lot of bus stops out there in the region. You know, definitely with only being able to cover 66 with this grant, we're not going to be able to hit them all. But hopefully we can establish a list and criteria that we can use for future grants, and we can keep tackling this list as we can find more funding available to continue to tackle this list, and then just start to take the highest ranking stops and keep working down that list until we can make all of our stops accessible. So basically, today, what we're looking for any comments that you might have as we move forward, but definitely today was just more to give a preview of what's coming. And so when you all start to see some of these surveys online and us reaching out in the community for this input, that you understand that you understand what we're doing here, what we're asking for the input, and also aware that after we get this public feedback, that we'll be coming back to this group, or probably asking for a subset of this group to help us sit down in more detail with all the information that we bring back from the public and help us establish what that final criteria is, so we can move forward on ranking these bus stops and move forward with this grant implementation.
Great, thank you so much for that presentation. I actually know I have about 5 questions, so maybe if you want to take a seat instead of our standing, I just want you to be most comfortable, okay, and then we'll get started.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine.
I think there's a seat there.
I can sit down.
Okay, and so I'm going to start at this end. That's right, thanks for reminding me. Public participation process. Do we have any members of the public that would like to comment on what we just heard? No. Okay. Great. So
we're going
to go ahead and start at the end here.
Go ahead,
please.
Thank you. Is one of the criteria to make faster egress, entry and egress from the bus at crowded stops? I'm a big supporter, a big fan of departing from the rear, loading from the front. I imagine there are stops for that. Being told that there are stops where that's not possible now, particularly busy stops where having a portal to receive people leaving from the rear would, if that was a criteria and could be part of an improvement, it would actually allow buses to flow better.
Yeah, the goal of the program is that any stuff that we do make improvements to, we would look to make sure that we're accommodating both doors of the bus and any stop improvements that we do make. It may, you know, through the selection criteria process, we could have input on whether targeting specifically stops like that might be good or not. That would come through the selection process. So that's just, you know, it's a good idea to put out there and see how people want to prioritize that. But that ultimately could be one of those items that we would determine how much of a priority we make it. But definitely any stop that is selected for that, we want to make our best effort to make sure that we're accommodating
everything we can, which would be that, you know, full distance, you know, that concrete pad when you get off the bus to hide the door. The other things I forgot to mention in the presentation as well is making sure that, you know, we can accommodate shelter if possible, and adding accessible, you know, adding on to the sidewalk if people aren't able to get from the bus stop area to where they need to go to. If we need to add sidewalk connections, that can be part of the grant. Installing curb cuts at the intersection can be part of this grant. So there's a number of improvements, and it's not specifically just like directly at the stop. It's all about access to the stop and the stop itself.
Thank you, Barbara.
I think you've answered one of my questions, at least partly, is that what sort of improvements, what's the range of improvements that you are looking at? Is there anything you haven't already mentioned that you are looking at doing at curb stops? What kinds of improvements are you considering?
Yeah, I mean, you know, primarily they are accessibility improvements, and that would continue to hold true for this second piece of the grant, would be, you know, accessibility improvements as well, though the accessibility improvements as part of this grant wouldn't be specifically targeted just to disabled people, because, you know, having good sidewalks to walk on and having concrete to step off of either door of the bus, I mean, that's an improvement for all riders, not just those that have, you know, that can only use the stop if those improvements are there. But yeah, like, you know, space for shelters and those concrete pad waiting areas and things like that. That's mainly what this grant is targeted towards.
And I'm thrilled to hear about it. This person with minor disability, and I enjoy having a shelter. Protected from the elements and the seat is wonderful, so I'm happy to see that improved. One last thing is that I'm always amazed at how much things do cost, so I'm not trying to challenge how much these things cost, but I would say anytime, I think it's great you're trying to be very careful with the criteria, and I look at $300,000 to do that, to prioritize, when you could do like 15 more stops, you could cut into that, you know.
Yeah.
So I know there's a happy medium, I don't pretend to be an expert, but that surprised me. How big that number was.
No, and those are budget estimates. So definitely, you know, with the new Freedom Group program, I don't believe that we're going to actually use all the money that we identified in that front section for that either. So, you know, we definitely want to maximize the number of stops that we can improve.
Thank you. Okay, great. Ben?
I'm very happy that this is all happening as a person who uses the bus regularly. I think it's great. And just a couple of comments. First on the new Freedom Grant, I think one of the things that we talked about here before is that a lot of the difficulty in accessibility is not the lot's fault. It's that the jurisdictions have put up barriers like garbage cans and tree boxes and things like that. And I'm wondering if that would be part of the grant to work with the jurisdictions to remove some of those barriers. Second, I want to commend two stops to you in particular that I've noticed have a lot of disabled riders and that have particular problems. One is Adams Mill Road and Irving Street, Northwest. This is eastbound on H2. For some reason, there's a core of disabled riders who use that stop, and they can only go one way. There's no sidewalk there because the district is sort of there. There's some barriers there. That's a good one. The other one that's heavily used is 14th U Northwest, which is eastbound on all of the 90s. The sidewalk there is incredibly narrow. It's a big bus stop, very heavily used. But there's also the U Street streetscape project that's going on there. So working with them to improve that particular bus stop would be very good. On the other grant, I'm wondering, could you use it for signage at the bus stations, like arrival signs? I know this is sort of a separate project that Metro's been working on, but I'm wondering if some of this money can be put into that. Also, I wonder if weather is a consideration, too. As Barbara was saying, there are certain places in the Metro system where they only have the sign on a stick bus stops rather than the shelters. And I'm just wondering if Metro might have introduced weather or sort of proximity of a shelter to the area is part of consideration for that. I want to echo her comments as well, the cost of $21,000 for a stop sign would hold off me. And I think I would definitely volunteer to, you know, help with any ideas or gather ideas from other riders. You know, I ride the bus every day, I'm happy to, you know, ask or hand out materials or whatever you like, really. So thank you.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, as far as the arrival signage, that is an acceptable piece that we could add to the stops that that we select with this criteria. So when we're installing that, if we have the opportunity to install that signage, we could do that with this grant. We'd probably want to determine the criteria of what sort of stops we would want to spend the money to put that arrival signage in, because, you know, we might want to weigh that against making more of these accessibility improvements at the stops, you know, especially with the number of people now that can access that information on smartphones and stuff like that. It's, you know, I mean, it's definitely a good idea, extremely high ridership stops, to put the signage in there, but I think that's probably a determination of ridership, whether it's a wise investment.
Thanks, Justin. I just want to echo that I'm really excited about this. I think this is really good. Getting that education coming this evening. I have a lot of questions, so I'm going to go ahead and ask them a lot of questions and ask your timeline for this grant and how the timeline for the grant, the timeline for the feedback that you need, and the best way in which we can provide that feedback to you. Because I know I can't get into all my questions and some of my colleagues can't either. So that's the first part. So your timeline for all of that and when you want to start doing that. And then the second portion is asking just if you would ask, we have talked a little bit about your outreach to the general public, but I don't know if you know more about what that outreach looks like. I'll just say one of my concerns is that public participation, sometimes we can sporadically ask the public to participate, and when we do that, then we get sporadic attendance to the public for participation. So we just had this hearing on bus service expansion and reduction services, and now we're talking possibly about having public participation on bus stop enhancements and things like that. And then if we're going to enhance the budget, and then so having these different hearings and weigh the public down, and I was just sitting here thinking that it may be more beneficial to finding not only this awesome project here, but other things that are on the horizon that Metro wants to interact with the public with, and have a bigger, larger, like, summit conversation in different areas, talking to people about different things that may impact them, and hopefully you'll get, and I know you're going to, hopefully you'll get a better turnout, and you'll get the feedback that you want, and a timely way that you can.
Yeah, those are good ideas, and we had talked about the opportunity to add on to some sort of other public hearing possibly and set something up to try and solicit information about this as well, so we can look for opportunities that are coming up and we might be going out on another issue to do that. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get stuff together in time to go out for the bus service public hearings with this information as well. As far as the schedule, I think we're looking at, you know, somewhere around January or whatever to possibly try and get something online to start asking people questions about this. But then we're also working with our Office of Civil Rights to determine an outreach plan, so to make sure that we hit other groups out there that may not be able to access the stuff online, so we make sure that we're, you know, reaching out to everybody who we feel should be offered the opportunity to provide us input on this.
So can I just ask then, is there a drop that are you shooting for? You want this information by like spring? Is that what you're shooting for?
Yeah, we don't have an exact schedule at this point right now, but
okay, well, that would be. Okay, well, I don't have a list for it. Can you just give me us a favor, and when you guys work out your timeline and say, like, this is what we need to be saying, and this is what we want to be saying, so that we can be beneficial and helpful. If you can let us, can you let us know, like, this is what we need to be saying, and then that can also give us the impetus to actually need what we need and not complain about it later.
Okay, yeah, no problem.
Sorry, thanks, Zach, do you have a comment?
Yeah, just a quick comment, going with Joe's, yeah, timelines. Please see the numbers, appreciate the work you're doing with AC, obviously. The 17 in Prince George's County, 45 in DC, I forget what your third number was. Arlington, thank you. Do you have, when do we expect to see the improvements in the bus stops in those areas? Do you have a timeline as far as that is concerned?
Right now, we're working with the jurisdictions to try and develop plans for construction. You know, I believe that, you know, the District of Columbia has been looking at the list and is supposed to get us some information back about those stops. And we've also been discussing it with the other jurisdictions to try and develop, you know, what's the best way to actually make these construction improvements and develop a timeline for that, but no, we don't have a specific timeline at this point.
So I guess, and I'll just leave it with this, when you get that would be great. We have been collecting that bus stop information from the jurisdictions through our bus rail subcommittee. So number one, I hope these numbers are reflected in the reports that we're getting as far as improvements are concerned. So I think that would be good for us to double check if that happens. Timelines for improvements, when you have them, would be wonderful. We want, my committee wants to go before the board with recommendations from the AAC on accessibility improvements by January. So this is great information. And then I guess the last thing I'll say is, as I recall, the board was very interested in bus stop improvements, particularly DC. I'm not quite sure who wants to take access of the jurisdiction of the 45 bus stops that are going to be improved, but Kelsey takes it, or I take it, or fight over it, we both mention it, or whatever. Someone gets to take credit for that one. Okay. You can. We both think, no, I think that's great. Seriously, that was something that the board did talk about, making the bus stops accessible. So I think having that kind of information at this meeting is good and something that we need to highlight for the board.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, thanks.
Thanks, Lauren. Yes, good evening. I have a couple of questions. First of all, you said that you have been working with jurisdictions. Now, are jurisdictions chipping in some money helping with this, or is this just exclusively with the grant? Because if I know, for example, in Arlington County, we have ART, and a lot of these bus stops are shared by both, you know, ART and Metro, and maybe we could share in the funding, and maybe we can sort of spread around a little, you know, just from that point of view, maybe a little bit more, and get more bus stops. I don't know how, you know, you're working, if it's just site selection that you're working with the jurisdictions, that's totally different. And then I'm assuming that they have been already identified, right? The buses, the stops or not?
The stops for the new Freedom Grant, yes, they've been identified.
They've already been?
Yes.
Have they been made public or not yet?
We've distributed those to the AAC and stuff like that. I don't have the list with me right now. But yeah, we've given us that list out previously, so there's no restrictions on that.
And then my other question was in one of the slides, it says that you have funds $1.5 million to improve 50 stops, but 75 stops were selected for initial design.
So basically that list of 75, those, what we had to do was, you know, we had a long list of stops and we didn't want to invest time doing site visits on every stop. So we narrowed the list down to 75, knowing that when we were trying to go out there, that we were going to find stops, that we were going to find that just for a number of reasons, we just weren't going to be able to do it. Actually, a good, one of the stops that we actually looked at on the New Freedom Grant was brought up earlier here, 14th and U Street. Unfortunately, you know, it was on the list, but, you know, there's just no right of way there. I mean, it's, you know, it's got concrete all around there, so it's not like it's a mud hole or something like that. It's just that, you know, there's a narrow sidewalk between buildings, and unless the District of Columbia is willing to build a curb extension at that point, there's nothing that can be done at that location. So that would have been part of that 45 that the District of Columbia had on their list, but we're not going to be able to actually do any construction work there. So there would be no improvements made there at this time.
So that's how the 75 went to 50.
Yeah, so that's how the 75 would go to 50 stops would actually make it to construction. And that's what we're working with right now, is with the jurisdictions to get estimates on what it's going to cost to do the construction work at those 75 stops, and then narrow that down to 50 based on what the construction estimates are, and taking those ones out that cannot be done at this time.
Thank you. All right, so as a frequent bus rider and someone who actually prefers the bus to the train, I have a number of questions for you. I'm going to be quick. I have 4 questions and 2 comments. My first question is, what is the timeline for this effort? When will riders actually see the bus shelters or the improved bus stops in place? And then also, I'll ask you at the same time, is there a deadline for the money to be spent? Must Metro spend it by a certain time?
Yeah, I mean, the grant programs like this, typically we have about 3 years to spend this money for the grant program, each grant program. As far as a specific timeline, at this point right now, that's what we're trying to do. On the New Freedom Grant, that's what we're trying to identify with the jurisdictions, is, you know, the cost for construction, you know, how we can actually do the construction. You know, a few of the jurisdictions seem to have existing contracts out there that are already doing sort of like, you know, curb cut sidewalk improvements and stuff like that within their jurisdiction. So we're trying to find out if we can do this work in conjunction with that to get it done quicker, or whether we need to actually go out there and negotiate other contracts to do that, and that would affect the timeline. So right now we don't have the exact timeline because we're trying to figure that out.
Great, and it's good to hear that you're talking about this jurisdictional cooperation possibly, and I want to echo some of the comments that previous council members said. I think that anytime you can work with another jurisdiction and get some of their money and some of their resources into it, it makes it a better product. So I'm glad to hear that you all are doing that. The other question I have for you, can you give us an idea of what a $21,000 bus stop will look like? Is this the Cadillac version of stops? Is it the Chevrolet Lumina? I don't know what bus shelter costs are. I don't know what pit screens, or I'm not calling it the pit screens, but the digital screens are. What does a $21,000 bus stop look like?
Well, that's an estimate per stop. There's obviously going to be stops that are going to be much less. There's going to be stops that are going to cost more. The issue that probably drives that average cost per stop up is some of the stops where, you know, think of some of the stops out there in some of the outer jurisdictions where you're on a, you know, 4-lane highway, there's no sidewalk, there's no concrete pad, there's no shelter. There's a ditch that's going to require some sort of retaining wall or something like that to build the pad up, you know, to build a level pad, or, you know, build some sort of, you know, I guess you'd call it a culvert over the ditch, you know, like build something over the ditch where the water from the ditch would run underneath it, you know, some sort of drainage, you know, fix the drainage. So that's what's driving the average cost up. A lot of, you know, because like for the New Freedom Grant, a lot of these stops, especially in the District of Columbia, don't come anywhere close to that cost, you know, because it's just a matter of adding, you know, a few square feet of concrete or whatever to make sure that, you know, there's stops where there's like sidewalk, but then there's no connection, you know, there's a grass strip between the sidewalk and the curb, and it's just a matter of coming in there and adding some concrete in that grass strip, and that obviously is not going to cost $21,000. Part of that $21,000 cost also involves the cost of to draw up the engineering drawings of those stops, and there are some things that engineers need to look at when, you know, it's not as simple as just going out there and pouring out some concrete. The engineers have to look at, like, how that concrete is going to affect drainage in the area and other factors, whether there's utilities underneath that it's going to affect. So some of that cost is basically just having an engineer draw up the plans to actually do the work as well.
Okay, great. And then I just have two comments. One comment is about, I guess I'm going to call it my prioritization. As someone that rides the bus frequently, one of the things I look at is there a concrete pad, meaning can I get from the stop to the street relatively safely and easily? Is the correct bus route information there, whether it's in paper form or electronic form? How clean is it? Is there digital signage available at that bus stop? I think that this is a great time for Metro to add on to whatever efforts they're already doing to, I guess, give some parity or some equality with the train and with those that ride the bus. And so at major bus stations, especially at every Metro station, Ward 7 and Ward 8, Minnesota and Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast intersection, Minnesota and Benning Road Southeast, Good Hope Road and Naylor Road, these are major bus points for us that people would greatly benefit from an electronic sign of some sort thing when the next bus is coming. I also look at shelter from the rain and sun, as Barbara mentioned. And then one thing that I don't think Metro thinks about so much is the proximity of that shelter or that bus stop to the street. On Pennsylvania Avenue, on the Potomac Avenue Metro, the south side of Pennsylvania Avenue, that bus shelter is almost like in the exhaust system of all the cars that go past. So it'd be great if that could somehow be taken into consideration about bus stops. The other comment I have about public participation and outreach from WMATA is to, I think for an effort like this, online surveys are great. I definitely think you should do that. I think maybe even if WMATA was a bit creative and did like a Twitter hashtag for this effort, where you didn't make everyone register and maybe just have them hashtag, put a pound sign, bus mobility study, and then their suggestion of what they want to see. I think this is a great time to do something like that. But I think really to get the input from the individuals that ride the bus, at least from what I see, you're going to have to make sure that you have a foot campaign. You get out there on the stops, you talk to people, you got a clipboard in hand, and you write down what they have to say, because they're probably going to be on the move and on the go, and they'll probably talk to you and tell you what they want, but they might not have the time to fill out a survey. And also go to the community meetings, and I'm more than willing to help with the DC type infrastructure of how we meet as a community in DC, but also go to the schools. I can't help but think some of the school kids have an idea of what they want at their bus stop. That's it. So thank you for taking on the
call. Yeah, good idea. Thank you.
Carl?
Thanks for coming. A couple comments on the outreach piece. I think Twitter would be a great vehicle to use. I think online would be, through your website, would be a great vehicle to use. I agree that you need to be, it would be great to see some outreach directly to bus customers, or maybe through, like, you know, those hanging placards that we've seen on you know, the overhead hanging poles and that sort of thing. I would hope that the customer comment form that already exists, I imagine people frequently complain about bus stops, no offense to you and your department, but as they complain about many things and have comments and suggestions, hope you'd look at that data that's amassed over the years as well. And I think that, well, obviously bus stops primarily are serving riders, I think that having a discussion with the drivers would be a useful exercise, because they might be seeing things that could help improve the safety of riders waiting or that sort of thing. You know, different perspective. Obviously, you know, you want to do outreach to riders. I think that's all my comments. Thanks for coming.
Okay. Yeah. And just to note that the comment that you had about the bus operators, about probably a year ago or so, an online form was created that's on our internal network where our service operations managers have the ability to go through and input, and we get a number of inputs from those service operation managers, which also, that information is being relayed to them from bus operators, and they're reporting on bus stop issues, and we try and address those issues as we can.
Great, thanks.
Hi, thanks for coming. So I don't, I'm not really sure if this is, I guess it's a comment more so. I've noticed that a lot of, well, all the bus stops are kind of varied, so I guess sometimes one is updated, and they have new updates that go to a different stop, and the old stop that was updated a few years ago is not, so anyhow, that map up there is kind of, I've noticed that some of the bus stops, they have a map like that, and it's super vague, it's just like a squiggly line, and it doesn't really show people in relation to where they're going, like, this is close to downtown, or this is close, it's, there's no north or south symbol, that bothers me, because if I just go up there, I don't know where I'm going, I'm not sure if this is the right bus, and then you have to stop, and ask the bus driver, do you go here, do you go there, he's like, no, whatever, just keep moving, so I'm not sure if, I think that would relieve a lot of confusion for people, and especially for people who haven't ridden the bus very often, and it would help people feel less intimidated by the bus. So I'm wondering if there could be some sort of overall consistency between all of those things, and maybe for the bus stops that already have the shelters, the concrete, things like that, maybe they, that a little box on the pole be able to not cost that much money, so whatever left was left over from the stops that aren't utilizing all that 21K, maybe that could be put towards that. And also, I think there should always be a schedule. I mean, I know sometimes they're get torn or someone breaks a little plastic stuff, but I mean, if there's no schedule, someone could just be staying there and not even notice the bus is never going to come at that hour, or it's already stopped running, or whatever. So I just, I'm not sure if that's part of this grant, but I think that it's something that's very, very important.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of those items aren't necessarily part of this grant, but we do have other programs where we're working on improving that information, and we've been trying to invest a good bit into that program, but we know it's still a work in progress. Hopefully you're seeing some improvements, and we'll continue to see improvements in that program.
Great. Any other comments from council members? Okay, well, Mr. Hines, we definitely thank you for coming. We hope that this information was useful, and we hope that we will receive an update from you sometime in the near future. And please call on us the list, right, of the 75 that were collected for the Freedom Grant. If you could share that with us or with John,
I can. I'll send John the list of the 75 stops, and then also, you know, I'll be back after we start to get some public input to talk about the information that we've received, and we can talk about how to move forward with, using that public input to identify the criteria for this part of the grant, and also set up a program that we can continue to move forward with future grant opportunities as well.
Great, and please take us up on our offer, especially some of our members individually, to work with you through John to give you whatever else it is that you need.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So, next agenda item is the October 11th Incident Communications Panel Report. And I am going to let Carla have the mic here, but I want to start with saying that I want to thank the council for all of its effort in helping us to get this done. I think Carla is to be commended for the job that he did. And I was extremely pleased. And I think that if the riders had a chance to hear us and hear our statement and hear how Carl represented us, I think that they would have been very pleased as well. This is just, again, one step of many, but I think that when Carl goes over what happened, and hopefully Carol will chime in as well, I was just extremely pleased with it, and I hope that other council members will also be extremely pleased with what we did on that day.
Thanks, Kelsey. First, I want to thank everyone for their work leading up to the hearing and feedback on both the process and obviously content as well. I think that the panel was a very good step, very productive discussion. There was a lot that I think could be learned from anyone who was an outside observer, writer, a member of the general public, in hearing the perspective of kind of the first responder that was here, and I think from Arlington County Fire Department, and from all the different departments within Metro, and how they are, how they approach those, and how they work together, and are trying to improve their processes. From my perspective, I think it was filmed, and the chief of staff and general manager, I believe, expressed interest in putting that video up online. And I think that that is something we want to see happen sooner than later, probably. And hopefully that can include some sort of public discussion or dialogue, so that if you watch it and you see something or you have a question, that can be incorporated. And the board chair, Mr. Downey, who chairs the committee that we appeared in front of, have also expressed interest in kind of a future discussion of a public event of some sort. I think that there are some questions about what that needs to look like, so we can move forward and move with John and Moida to make those happen. I sent around the audio on email, and the audio is still online now, but once the video is up, I want to see some. I don't know if anyone has any questions.
Actually, I was going to make one point and then let Carol comment if she wanted, if she had anything to say, and then I'll go to the public if they've had anything to say. One point is the sheet after, there is a sheet that has some of the board members, some of their comments about our participation. Well, these were the remarks that they actually made. I don't know, I guess it's page 6 or so in our packet. Some of the comments that the board actually made at the communication panel session. And so I just wanted to highlight a couple of things, continuing the discussion with the council, working with the RAC bringing this as an interest. And so I wanted to, again, thank you all and recognize you all for working cooperatively with the board. It wasn't easy at times, but I think the board appreciated. So before I go to the public, Carol, did you have anything you wanted to add, have a recap of what happened during this?
No, I'll just say this, that I think that Carl did an outstanding job, we were well represented by his remarks. And I thought what was most interesting to me is that many of the committee members, by their body language and comments, were interested and curious about the things we brought out as we were. And that it was almost like we unleashed a certain amount of energy that they had to inquire about the same issues, which I thought was interesting.
Thanks. Do we have any comments from any members of the public? Okay. Seeing none, any comments from council members? No. And Carl, is that it?
I mean, that's all I have, I think. If anyone has any specific suggestions on next steps, we're happy to hear them. I mean, the movie is going to be the main thing, the movie. Recorder. Starring yours truly. Is going to be the first piece, and then once we can get that up and get a vehicle for the public, we can look at the future of that piece.
Yeah, maybe I missed something, or I know we haven't got the movie, and I didn't do the audio. Is there any kind of general recap about what was the outcome of the discussion, or is that something we've already distributed? I just don't know.
I haven't typed up a summary, but I think that it was very focused on explaining the roles that exist. There was both Ms. Bowersox, who's the communications person, and several other staff members, did spend some time talking about how the system used to work, and how, especially when it comes to the communications piece, the communications team didn't used to have people stationed directly in like the emergency operations center. Is that the right word, John?
Operations.
Yeah. And now they do, and now there's a lot better coordination. I think that one of the pieces that was outstanding that I think the board echoed, the comments that I made, was that the who's in charge question, and I think that there were a lot of the folks on the panel, I mean, there was always, you know, oh, well, yes, these first responders are in charge when they get here, and there's the two people who are deployed, you know, immediately that come, and then local jurisdictions are called, so someone's always in charge, and that was kind of a recurring theme, but I think we all know as writers that it's easy to say that someone is in charge. I think that something more visible is what we would like, or something that's more standard, you know, at least from my perspective. And I think that that's something that we might want to follow up on as far as suggestions. And, you know, I think that the board and staff and the GM definitely recognize that that's a desire of writers, but I think that we might need to be clear in what we want, frankly.
I mean, in many ways, I'll just add, I saw the meeting as one where staff, there was a panel of people here, staff members here, explained to board members, this is how the process should work, this is what we do, this is what maybe we've done in the past, this is what we've changed based off of what we heard, what we've experienced, and then there was the board asking these more forward-thinking questions. And not to say that the staff wasn't presenting forward information, but it's kind of a briefer. Before you, I think, make assumptions, you're asking the staff, well, what do you do now? And then when the staff, the board would say, oh, okay, well, how about this? Or I've heard this from writers. So I think it was just the very first foundational step of, let's get the information from our staff first about how they currently operate, what changes they're making, what they already know is an issue, and what they're doing. And now we can go back and work with the council again to say, based off of what we've heard, instead of again having an assumption, how can we improve this experience?
Mm-hmm. I think I listened to the hearing at work, and I thought it was, what everyone said, I thought it was a good hearing for what it's supposed to do. I think that it served the role that it said it's supposed to serve. I think my issue, though, is that we heard how it is supposed to work, and we've also heard from writers that that's not how it works. And so I think that my suggestion for the next step is to hear from writers about how it works, and then allow the board to hear from writers, you know, especially new writers who have experienced these incidents. I will be honest and say that I'm not pleased with Board Member Downey's statement that these are not daily occurrences for some people. These types of things are almost daily. And so I think that my hope is that we will move, and I know we're going to let Board Member Downey, so it may not be 49, but we will move to allowing people who have experienced these incidents to inform the board about, this is what incident I was in, this is what happened there, this is why I was confused, this is how I believe I could have been better served. And then allow, there may be good reasons why things didn't happen, and allow that conversation to take place. Policies, sometimes the policies, they're not always effective real life.
I agree with that. I agree with that. That perspective, but I think that there was a lot of talk of how it's supposed to work. I think sometimes it does work that way. You know, obviously emergencies are all different, incidents are all different. There's a huge scale if the incident is fire, you know. So, but yes, I agree that we heard how it's supposed to work. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I think it should be our goal. And I think the board and the general manager share this belief that, you know, we want to bend the needle towards more of it working more.
So again, great job. And if there are no other comments, I'm going to move on to the other agenda. I have a part. Do you have one?
Yeah. Again, maybe I missed this, but so what is the next step from here? Where does the conversation go from here?
Next immediate step will be posting video online of the, and I don't know if you guys are able to give us a timeline on that.
Hopefully by the end of this week.
Hopefully by the end of this week, video. And then, do you know if there's going to be some sort of way for people to comment on it?
Or I can ask we can put an email link with the video.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's certainly possible.
Yeah, there's another update. So the chairman has asked to meet with the leadership of
at the, in December, I think, right?
Well, definitely meet themselves before the meeting, you know, so that they can figure out what the next steps are.
Okay.
By the time they meet in December, they'll have.
Okay, right, and that's why I want to remind everybody, you know, the RAC leadership team meets with the board leadership team quarterly, and so it was mentioned that we would discuss this again in December. So that's probably, so these ideas are good, ideas that Joseph and Cara and others have put forward, because we can come to the table with that and make sure we mention that's something we want to see.
But we, they don't have to wait for the leadership meeting post, do they?
No.
Well, and in short answer, I think that's the, I mean, I think once that's posted, I think it should be our goal as members of the Writers Council to make sure that people we know and people we've read with, the communities we interact with, see that and see how it's supposed to work, because I think that's a hopeful exercise in helping it make, helping it work better. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Great, any other comments? Okay, seeing no hands, I'm going, thanks Carl, I'm going to go on to RAC comment procedures. As you all know, we adopted the public participation process in August, we said that in 3 months we would come back to it, and so Carol's actually going to lead this discussion. Carol, you have the floor.
What I would like to do tonight, since I was late and Gail was out and didn't have, I had this grandiose plan after the last meeting, CAC meeting, we kept the work group together, so none of which I did. And I also didn't get this out in time or out of the public comment. So what I'd like to do is to use this time for people to make comments, if they have any, on this proposed public participation. And if the comments are minimal in terms of content, then I'm hoping that we can amend it and set this as a permanent process tonight. If the comments are not minimal, then I think what we need to do is to convene a work group quickly to incorporate all the things we listened to tonight and to come up with a proposal that the RAC can approve at this next meeting. So with that, I would say that basically I think the comments were sent out for the proposal that we approved in August were sent out on Friday, and there were basically 3 sets of comments. One person said they had no comments, and I got some comments from Carl, Kelsey, and I had some comments myself. So what I think we need to do is to listen and see what people have to say about it.
Okay, so Carol, would you like to get the public's input first, or
yes,
so are there any members of the public that have a statement or something they want to say to us about this agenda item? Nope. Okay. So then I guess the discussion is now on the council. And I see, I'm going to start on this side. Frank, please, go ahead.
I just want to say that I think that it's still a very new procedure that we're using, and I think that rather than establish a permanent process, I think we should have a clause in there to come back yet again or come back regularly to review the procedure, because I don't feel that we had enough time to see how the process is being used and possibly abused, and other possible ways that could be open to us. So I would like just to make sure that there's a review clause in there.
Thanks. Carl?
I agree with Frank. I emailed a few things around. I want to reiterate, just one of them very briefly, is that I'm not convinced we need to ask for organization. I've been back and forth on this quite a lot. I think name and jurisdiction in which you live is very helpful to know, but I don't think, I mean, I think generally, I know we've discussed talking about people identifying themselves by organization if, because we've seen groups, advocacy groups come in, everyone had, you know, a bunch of people at the same talking points, and, you know, but I think that We also get a lot of people that come in that are just members of the public and they don't have an organization. Their organization is being a member of the public. So I think, frankly, I think we could mix the organization piece and ask to the component about, you know, wondering, you know, did all, are all these people part of, you know, the ACT Committee on Transit or whatever? You know, I think it's pretty easy to tell. We've all been in public hearings. You know, you can tell, you know, you can see what the messages are. So that would be my big suggestion. That would be my big suggestion.
Anything else?
No, not right now.
Okay, Dan?
Yeah, I didn't see it mentioned here, but I think I did see it in one of Carol's emails, or some email traffic, that if the public addresses an issue to a lot of staff, that they're not going to respond or something like that. Carol, can you just maybe brief us a little bit on that? And I didn't see it in here, and I'm wondering if that needs to be put in there in some way.
What is that, Dan? What did you just say?
There was something about a member of the public, and actually came up, I think, in the last meeting.
The leadership team was briefed immediately prior to the October meeting, maybe a couple of days before, actually, too, as well, that WMATA staff, and WMATA staff is here, so I'd like to be corrected if this is not correct, but WMATA staff will not answer questions from the public during our public participation procedure after certain agenda items. And so I'm sure that staff has their reasons for that, and that's a question that needs to go to staff, because I don't know their reasons for it. And the staff here? That's interesting. Okay. The communications director, she was here, but okay. I think she left. Okay. John Loida, do you all want to add anything to this as to why staff has taken this stance? Because I've gotten this question from other council members, too.
Yeah, I think the general feeling is that they are here to provide you as a body with information and answering the questions. And it's not really a dialogue with the public. I mean, this is not the venue, or we don't have the time to go back and forth with the public. But, you know, they can listen, and you guys can certainly raise the same question if you feel the same.
My response to that, I see where you're coming from, but according to the plan as it's written here, it's up to the chair to manage the time. And one of the reasons that public input is actually welcome here is because they have direct access. And I think one of the things, I just make sort of a general comment, that one of the things that I observe is more that I get more into this world like the woods, is that WMATA has put up several barriers, several filters between itself and the public, and this seems to be yet another one of those filters, and that it makes it seem like WMATA is afraid to address the public without those filters. And I think that creates that sense, and quite frankly, it feeds the conspiracy theorists among us, myself included. I think there's something to be said for WMATA staff being able to address members of the public directly in this forum, that it should really be up to the chair to manage the time.
I'm going to let Carl go first and then Carol.
I just want a comment on that. That piece, staying aside from the debate on like staff barriers and all of that, I think that we have the opportunity as council members to ask questions of staff, as is exhibited every time, and staff answers them, even if they're not relevant to the issue at hand, as we see frequently in this body. So I think that if there are questions that are posed or comments that the members of the public pose, you know, I have no doubt that any one of us could very easily, as we did last month, you know, pick up that question, pose it, and get an answer. Now, I agree it's not ideal, but I don't know that I'm not as worried about it as personally. Carol might have a vision.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't mind it. And I guess, but here's the issue that I pose. Maybe this is one of the questions. In other words, if it may be useful for you to go online and read what WMATA's rules are about public comment, which are different and coming out of a different point of view from ours. So the question
I sent to you as well in that email. That is the only, I believe, policy they have when it comes to that.
And so what I did was I posed a question, and I, you know, which is, whose rules prevail? If the WMATA staff is here to make a presentation to the RAC, do the RAC rules on public contact, procedures on public contact prevail, or does WMATA's? And I don't think, I certainly feel like I can answer that question. I, you know, philosophically, I might not like it, but I have to accept that there are differences, and I don't think we can resolve them. And I think the workaround is as Carl expressed it, I don't think this is necessary. We might want to address WMATA on this whole issue of more open communication separately, but I don't think we can really say that the chair can compel WMATA staff to answer questions posed by the public. I mean, that's the long and short of it.
Right,
so if you want to or not, I think that's really, especially after reviewing their documents, it's not going to happen.
And actually, I want to say that, you know, I don't necessarily care for it either, but as the chair, I'm going to respect the decision right now, and I think that we need to, if we want to include a letter expressing how we disagree with that statement, then I'm willing to do something like that and put that forward. But there's actually a bigger issue here, and that issue is that I think the RAC sees public participation differently than maybe WMATA staff sees it. I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way. I think we just have to work together over time to come to the same place. And I think that sometimes, look at these council meetings sometimes as a dinner party. You invite a guest to a dinner party, and I don't think they expect that guest expects everything to be rubber stamped and then just to be applauded and commended, but I don't think they also, I think they also expect a very respectful environment and one where there are respectful disagreements. And I'm thinking that perhaps, you know, based off of what WMATA has been through in the past, maybe they hadn't always gotten the respectful comments in the way that they think they deserved. And so unfortunately, maybe the, and I don't know this, maybe the RAC is bearing the brunt of right now not getting that type of public participation response we want. So there's a bigger issue here. I think that we can include it in this proposal. Another thing I don't like is that as we were working on this, and maybe this is something the leadership team should have done, perhaps we should have reached out to staff and said, what is your perspective on this? And that way we could have known this before drafting it and seen if that maybe would have influenced how we drafted it or talked to the board ourselves to discuss it. But for tonight, I'm not sure if this issue will be resolved.
Can I
the way everyone
just respond to Ben's thing?
Sure.
I do want to say that I've been to four meetings. I don't know that I remember them exactly, but I don't think normally there's public comment and no one responds, and then the board responds to public comment in general. So that's my recollection for it. That's my thoughts of it. I may be wrong, but I think that's how it normally works. But I will say that we have decided that we want to do something different, and this is why I do think that we actually should send a letter, I think we should send a letter and the leadership team brings it up with the board, because at the last meeting, I did ask a question that members of the public asked for certain information, and now that information is not available for the public. And so,
that's how you look.
And you're not going to. Right. So I do think that that does matter, that if the public asks for something, that we should somehow try to find a middle ground on this. I guess I can see, because I've been to board meetings, and I see that they don't do it at all. And so if we can find some type of middle ground, I think that that would be great. I would hope that the board would be, I think that they would be interested in helping us find that middle ground.
Okay. Thanks. Well, you know, well, anybody else have any comment on that? Because, I mean, I you know, I can kind of see it both ways. As a federal bureaucrat, you know, I can remember, do you really want staff at a meeting which is public to make a comment or make a statement or answer a question that hasn't been fully vetted up online? And maybe that's speaking bureaucratically, you know, but there's something to be said about, you know, if you neutralize their motivation, then there's something to be said about not having staff answer questions that are, I want to say half-baked, because they may not be fully fleshed out. You know what I mean? The answers may not be fully fleshed out. But I really think if we can, we need to come up with something that's workable for our public participation process. And I think on the side, we, as a separate idea we need to perhaps approach the board, and we have in the past approached the board about ways of being more open to the public, in terms of, you know, general managers, newsletter, things like that. But I think we need to keep those on two separate tracks.
Yeah, and for right now, as Carl mentioned, you know, we can ask those questions. If they're sending them to you, if they're emailing them to you, if they're emailing us, we can ask the questions. It's just a matter of formality, they will not answer it, someone from the body of public.
No, but I don't think it's important to say that sometimes the answer thing is that we can't give. We can't do it answers.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I also think it's important to say sometimes the answer that they give us, after the public has asked the question, we ask it for them, we can't give the answer back to the public. That's important to say, because then you can't say, I should ask that question if I can't tell them the answer you gave.
So let me try and take this back, though, to the public participation process. Is there something that we can recommend that can be done in this participation process that we have that might make us a little bit happy? I mean, have we thought about that? Because I guess I'm asking, because if we can talk about it, then we can write the letter, and that's fine. But I think as far as the public participation process proposal, I'm not certain we can really address it just yet.
Well, I think, yeah, I think we can't address it until a lot of chimes in about what they are and are not willing to do. And Gerald, you're right about your bureaucracy point. But the flip side of that, of course, is that if people lower down the chain are empowered by the management to speak facts of what they know on the ground, the operational realities, then that's one thing.
So Carol, I'll go back to you. Are you following on individuals or just more?
Well, I'm just, so far what I've read down is that we need to have something put in here and have regular review. Carl feels strongly that we need to not delete the organization, the department, the people's organization, delete it, and
Barbara has a comment, so.
Barbara?
Well, I was on that other topic.
Oh, you were on the other topic, okay.
I wanted to talk about that, yeah.
Okay.
Both, I think both of us.
Both of you all want to talk about the.
No, I have.
You have another comment? Okay, so Barbara, can we hold off on your comment for a minute?
Sure.
Okay.
No, those are the only notes I have, because I don't know what to say about the staff not commenting, except that, I was kind of taken aback, and I thought it was Kelsey when she stopped someone from asking a question and made a big to-do with the distinction between question and comment. And then after I understood a little bit more about it, to me, I think we should accept what the public wants to do with whether we ask a question or comment, even if that question is not answered. I mean, it's silly as that thing sounds.
Right. So, Ron, Frank, and Carl, and Barbara.
I want to first start with Frank's comment, but I think this needs to work a little bit longer before we make any drastic changes to it. But having said that, I do want to make one comment, since I won't be here when you revisit it in a few months. And that is, on them identifying their organization, I'm a strong supporter of that. And let me explain. If there's a misperception here that you have to represent an organization to say something, then that needs to be corrected. Obviously, if we're an individual representing the public, we need to clarify that. That's simple. But I do want to know, if they represent an organization, I want to know what that organization is. It helps me assess what they're saying. We all know that when you represent an organization, you come in with a viewpoint, and if I'm hearing a viewpoint from an individual, I want to know, is that their personal, are we just hearing from a general member of the public, or are we representing or hearing from some organization? Because everything we say here is assessed by our background. Everybody knows who we are. Everybody knows which jurisdiction we represent. If we make a comment, somebody may say, that comment's been made because of the jurisdiction we represent, and that's fair for a public body. But I do want to know, if they're representing an organization, who they're representing. I don't see any reason why a public body can't request that. And again, it's how you assess things. It helps you assess where they're coming from, and whether this group wants to follow up with some comment to that. So I'm a strong supporter of leaving that in.
Thanks. Yes, Linda?
The way we address that in our public comment procedures is we just put in parentheses, if any.
Okay. Okay, so that's an easy fix perhaps. Frank, and then Carl, and I'm trying to get all of the comments about the public participation process as it is in front of us before we get into the other issue of staff not answering questions from the public.
My comment is on the second.
On the second, okay. Carl, yours is on the process, or?
Sure is. I hear what you're saying, Ron. I think that I would feel comfortable with something that clarifies that, just to make sure it's very clear that, I mean, if the executive director of transit organization XYZ comes, I think usually they do identify.
I think they do.
I mean, that's fairly typical. But as long as the clarification, right now it's worded by, it makes it sound like you gotta do more. So I think if I could be more comfortable if that change was made. I also think that we should revisit it, but I do think we should try to approve something tonight to make sure it gets up on our website so that people can see it and so that we can start the laboratory experiment of making sure all this works correctly and works that maximizes the ability for public and staff and board to all interact in the most collaborative way possible.
Okay, so we have 4 minutes left technically to discuss this. What I'm trying to figure out is, do we need to form a working group of some sort and discuss this again, or do we think that some of these comments can be adopted tonight in a more casual form for some, for Carol to maybe send us? Okay, so Cara, is your comment about the process?
About the process.
Okay.
Okay, so for, during the remainder of the meeting, so for, this includes agenda minutes, scheduling, and adjournment of meetings. So basically, anytime the floor is open to the council to speak, it's also open to the public to speak. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
That's how I read it, Carol, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I think it's great. I think that's what we're here for, is to speak for the public and to funnel the public's thoughts, questions to the staff and board. But I just have noticed that it seems as when the floor is open, all of us want to say something, and I can just see that this, I just don't want whoever's leading you, for example, Kelsey, to be at the butt of something, of some sort of you having to decide who speaks, who doesn't speak, if there's not something said already. Like, you can only say up to however many minutes, or but just have something sort of consistent so that someone's not saying, oh, well, she's answering or listening to my one comment but not their comment, or vice versa, or whatever. I just don't want to turn into something where you're...
It hasn't been an issue thus far because we haven't had that many people, but hopefully with some of these changes that we're making, we'll have more riders present, and it could be an issue. But
I just want to say, I think I'm not opposed to a time limit or something established, because it gives people a target and a framework, and it makes it less subjective. Not that it ever would be like, oh, you're only getting 30 seconds because I don't like you.
Right.
But, which is what we're doing to you, Ron, when you come back and come.
I'll come back as a member of the public.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, 2 minutes or something. I mean, if we end up being here till 10 o'clock one night, we can revisit the time limit, but I don't think 2 or 3 minutes comment on the agenda items is...
And I have one more comment about any questions. So, if someone, that's not part of the process.
That is, the asking questions part of staff, that's something that's going to take a little bit more thought. So I'm happy to give it 10 more minutes on the agenda, but I'm trying to wrap up for Carol with the public participation process.
Well, this would actually be a question towards one of them, to us. So if there's no staff present and the public asks us a question,
sure.
I mean, that's open.
I believe you're free to respond.
Okay.
I really haven't discussed it yet.
Okay.
I don't
it's only to staff.
Right. Okay, so I see Candace and then your comment, Joseph, was not about the proposal, right, but the motion that was approved?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is, okay, sorry, so Joseph and then Candace.
I did just want to quickly, I think part of the problem, the proposal at the beginning was taking information that we don't really have to right now, getting that information, and then responding to the person. So we've had a couple people come at the beginning and ask specific questions, and we said we'll get back to them. I don't know, I think that maybe we should put some type of reporting mechanism in there, where at our next meeting, so we say, this would be asked when we got, because I know that we've had some of these questions happen, and I don't know that we ever actually followed up with those people that we said that we would get.
But should that go in the public participation process motion, or does that?
Well, I mean, that's, I don't know.
Well, that's a point of information, it's in here, we haven't been applying it, but it's in here. If you notice the third public comment here, it says the chair is, the chair will assign any action items to follow up to a RAC member, it should become RAC committee or work report to the staff coordinator, which was sort of answering someone to assign work to the staff coordinator. It's in here, we just haven't been doing it.
I just worry that, I mean, I was just trying to be promised people to get them something.
Follow up.
And I don't know that, it's very easy to forget, because I forgot about it right now. So I don't know that we're actually doing that.
I mean, if people come here and leave me their email address, I have followed up with them, that, you know, there was a woman from here, you know, 4 months ago about the Anacostia sales office. She's like, my email address, I've got her information.
Yeah. So the important thing to remember is that when we get requests from members of the public, to also keep John in the loop so that he can keep his eye or keep a record of all these people being responded to. Because if we're not getting it to him, then he's keeping a formal record of things and doesn't know what's getting out and what's not getting out.
But I think the missing link is just because we ask you, I know that. I think what we really need to do is to do a more public thing. So in other words, if somebody comes and asks a question or makes a comment or is implying that they need some information, that should be part of our proceedings. I'm not sure how that's going to be handled, maybe by, you know, a write-up or something.
Maybe John can use it included in our, in the communication that he sent to us.
Sure.
And before the meeting, saying, I also followed up in this person from the last meeting, and this was the response I gave to them.
Or good in the minutes.
So that we can wrap this part up, because you had another point, Carol?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm actually looking at the amendments that Joseph sent in August, and there was one thing I repeated suggested, but the one thing I think we sort of talked about and really didn't look. I think we ought to, the one that says during the remainder of the meeting, the public may comment on any agenda item, excluding administrative agenda items, and then I go on to, you know, go on to kind of summarize what that is, but I think agenda should come out. I think the public needs to be able to comment on the agenda, if you understand what I mean. In the sense that they might say during an open mic period, I want that you should include this on your agenda. I think that would be more appropriate.
I guess I didn't interpret agenda that way. I interpreted it as the agenda that day is being approved. Certainly okay. Welcome topics for discussion.
Okay.
To get staff members.
So in other words, their opportunity to comment on, they wouldn't have an opportunity to comment on the agenda except for the day.
Right. That's how I read it, because it's,
they would, but during the say open mic period, they would have an opportunity to comment yes. on or suggest questions.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so that we can wrap this up. Do you have another comment about this?
Yes.
Sorry, Candace. Okay, I'm sorry.
All right, I know that we're still discussing this, and I understand that we need to discuss it, but at the same time, I think that we can go ahead and put something in motion and give this a trial run, whether it's for 3 months, whether it's for 6 months, it just needs to be done. In some ways, I think we're putting the cart before the horse. When participation, you know, increases, then yes, we may have to put time limits on certain things, we may have to do other things, but until that point in time, I don't think we need to put time limits on people. And I think that that's sort of a moot discussion at this point. So I think at this point, we need to get this in motion and try it out for a little while and see what happens. And yes, things will need to be changed, but right now, we just need to basically put this in motion and then figure out a way to drum up public participation. Because we don't have the public participation. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what we need to focus on.
Great. So
it sounds like a motion.
I was going to say, right, do you want to drive the motion?
I have a motion.
John has a comment.
You guys approved this 3 months ago.
That's what I thought.
We're doing this, so.
It is a trial.
Yeah, I mean, so that's where I'm a little, I guess I just got a little lost. I don't know what needs to be moved or approved, unless you want to change something.
I think we're just going to get to it, I don't even.
Well, I thought we were changing and revisiting, looking at it periodically.
Right, well, can we live with this, if you want to take what John's interpretation is, that it sounds to me like, based on Carl and Ron's discussion, we could live with, if any, in terms of name and organization, if any, couldn't put in here. And then the other thing would be that, at the very end, it would say, we would put something to the effect that we will monitor every 3 months. In other words, the very last sentence on the next page, the back leadership team will solicit input from RAC members from the general public, and, we'll simply review the status of these,
Sounds good to me. Do we need to take a vote on this, or?
I have one quick thing. I just wanted to say how you said that John could put it in the minutes. I suggest doing that too, because the minutes are all uploaded, correct? That way, if someone came to one of the meetings and wanted, or whatever, that it was just there for the public to see that the question was answered, that's all.
So John, do we need to take a vote, or can we just accept this based on our discussion? Because they're actually relatively minor.
Well,
it won't take, if there's not objection, it won't take much to take a vote, but.
Okay.
So we'd be, I would, in response to Carol's comment, I would say maybe every 6 months instead of every 3 months.
Somebody please make a motion.
And then the other thing I would say would be, I mean, coming back to this time piece, if we could have established time limits, or it should be at the discretion of the chair, I personally would support, I will make a motion to amend your motion to, well, to, how do I propose time limits?
You've been bored in the second too long.
All right, I make a motion to add, to strike all the pieces about chair discretion on the time limit for public comment and say, public comment, jurors can comment for 2 minutes, 3 minutes on agenda items, and 3 minutes during the public comment period. Period.
So I think the discretion is.
And the reason is because I think we've got to clean up our own house. Why should we limit the public when we can go on and on and on with no, you know, barriers to our postulations, whatever you want to call it. I think we'd have to do this with the discretion of the chair. I think that part's been working very well, taking a quick, quick sense of who's in the room.
So Carol,
I guess my point is, I agree that it's been working fine so far. I wouldn't want the perception to exist that specific members of the public are being given less time to comment than other people because of what they've said before, because of, XYZ. If you recognize someone from, an organization you disagree with, I wouldn't want anyone to think that, oh, well, that's interesting. This public comment period is short.
Well, let's deal with that a little bit later. I'm going to ask Carol to put a motion on those first two items we heard, the clause extending, looking at the piece periodically, and the other, whether you need to identify an organization, because we've got like four other agenda items. So, and then we'll get to maybe
the response.
So Carol, can you, or Barbara?
I have something now on the process.
Okay.
Something that's occurred to me. When Vince and I first started this discussion, we were talking earlier tonight. I heard people talk about questions versus comments. And I know that had to do with staff, but just to clarify, we brought that up when we presented here, and I just want to make sure. It says comment here throughout, but we had said that's both questions and comments. Mm-hmm. Okay, is that still the question?
That was my understanding.
And if there's any debate on that, then I can be able to work that out.
I don't see it.
Okay, so we are talking about questions.
Okay, so do we want to make a motion now, or do we want to have a working group with a meeting next week?
I don't think we need to.
Yeah, I would make a motion to make two changes where the, we add the clause if any, where we talk about people being identified by name and organization, and that we could have a periodic review every 6 months.
And that we include responses if I can.
Okay, no, Carol's made a motion.
I'm sorry.
So what is the second?
Everything's kind of all over the map, it's really, we're having a really difficult time following what exactly is going on.
So Carol made the motion, I'm going to second. Carol, that was the end of your motion, correct?
Sorry to interrupt this.
I was only two things that she said.
Yes, it's on the list. No, she's not missing one, those are the two, the organization and the periodic.
No, but the third one was her idea, to put the responses from the public that John requested in the minutes.
No, that was a suggestion.
That was our.
That's part of the policy.
Can we just put it in there, vote on it at one time?
No, that's not part of it. So I second your motion, Carol.
Can.
I only caution you about putting responses in there. I would suggest if you want to do that, say something along the lines, it's putting personal information, because we do not want to post people's personal information online without their permission. We cannot do that.
I didn't think that would be personal.
For example, we do not have any of those.
I agree, and her motion doesn't include that, it just includes the first two items. So let's take a vote, because we have to move on.
We can do it without objecting to that, if it's an objection.
Are there any objections to the motion as it was proposed? No, okay, great, approved. All right, so moving on quickly.
Well, I'm sorry, I do want to ask that we, I mean, I thought we could have did this all at one time, but that we do amend the policy to put the responses excluding personal information in the minutes of the meeting. We could have probably been one. But that is my motion.
Discussion there. Okay, discussion. Doesn't say, does someone second?
I do.
Okay.
I think the minutes of the meeting are the minutes of the meeting. I don't think what happens after the meeting and who responded at home is part of the meeting minutes, unless, you know, that's what I'm going to guess. I think if you can get the email, the only way it's part of the minutes is if somebody then reads it in for the next time and reports back and then we get them.
I think you're right. So I'll take the motion back. I'll revisit it later. I thought that that will be it.
So we have about 20 minutes left, and I know that there were still some questions about staff responding to members of the public. Is that maybe something that we want to?
That's something that we have to discuss first with leadership.
Yes, with leadership, and have the leadership team first discuss, and then get back with you all. I think we've heard what you're saying, and I think we know what questions we need to ask, but I don't think we will get anywhere with it tonight until we talk to board leadership and until we talk to staff. So if everyone's okay with that, if you have any additional comment, unless there's something you officially want on the record right now, something you can't email us, and Barbara, you've waited a while, so why don't you go?
You know I was taken aback by that, so I sent you a John email about it. And I really echo what you're saying. It seems like there's them and there's us, and I didn't feel pushy, but the whole thing about questions and comments, especially in that regard, is that everybody can make a question, comment, or a comment question. They just have to reword it. It seems, I think that's a bad idea, or have you considered, you know, it can be, I think it's greater than what we may consider. So, I think that if I understood correctly, they won't take questions.
They won't make other comments.
Or either comments. Oh, okay, so getting on that. Okay, I thought it was going to take questions.
They're not going to. Again, as I understand it, they're not going to respond to the public. They're here to respond to the RAC and not necessarily the public. And this is why I think this is something we need to, the leadership team needs to get together and figure out how to best address this. And I don't, it's not an endorsement of what staff is doing. It's just recognizing our time constraint right now and trying to get all our ducks in a row before we figure out how to respond.
I think it would be good in doing that, having that communication. And as far as I'm concerned, I would love to have a relationship with somebody who call the right person and just have a chat,
yes,
and not send a letter.
You know, I actually mentioned that to somebody earlier today. It would be great if staff could just come and chat with us.
But the point I wanted to make is that I think maybe staff doesn't want to answer all questions. But I think we can ask questions. We should be able to ask questions. Because
because it's, you know, might be, you know, I'd like to check on that. Or it could be something similar, I didn't know what you meant when you said the yellow was X, you know, and it's a simple, oh, let me clarify. We're not talking about what was behind this, you know, and stuff. So I think we want to leave open the opportunity to ask even if we can't answer.
Great, okay, so we've got 20 minutes. Carol, do you have a comment? Okay, so Pat, and then I'm going to have to jump to the next agenda item, but I want you to know the leadership team hears you, and we're going to go back to the table and see if we can talk about this. Pat?
So my question is, I mean, my meetings, this is a non-issue. The staff respond back to whoever.
So you're saying it's not consistent with how.
Absolutely not.
Thank you, not just that, thank you.
AGM responds back to people in the audience, staff responds back to whoever, I mean, it's just a non-issue.
So this is just an OPAT, so this is something, again, that we can then take and say, revise and have.
So watch me lose.
Yeah, you're good.
Take it away.
We won't come back.
I wasn't aware that I had thought about that, Pat, that's a very good point, and that's something that we can really, okay, so next agenda item is the 7,000 series rail car visit. A few of us went. Lorraine, I'm going to ask you to give us a quick 5-minute recap.
A lot of us went on that visit to see the depot where they have the demo for the 7,000 series rail car. We also made a stop first at the Carrollton station to see the new vending machines for the smart trade machine, the smart trade vending machines. And some of the members of the AAC, they hands-on, you know, work hands-on with the machines, how they work, et cetera. So that was useful. Then we went to see the rail car. When we got in, then we saw what was there, the new improvements they showed us. When it got to the point of the questions and answers, well, I was a little, I know that this is already the model, okay? But a lot of the comments that we made, they said, well, we cannot do anything about that now. I was, because I remember specifically some questions on the hearing impaired, we can change that now. Well, no, there's nothing we can do about that now. I know that we had gone a year or a year and a half before, was it, more or less? And I remember specifically some comments from Deborah that she had made, and they said, oh yes, we can do this, we can do this. But it turned out that some of the things didn't work out. Like, for example, the one that sticks in my mind is that there is no way if you're in that train and there is some kind of malfunction or emergency or what have you, there's no way to communicate with the hearing impaired. Because everything is
audio.
It's exactly, it's audio and
preset.
Yeah, exactly. So that, and I remember that she had made some comments about that in the previous, in the, you know, the previous visit that we had done to the rail car visit. And they said, oh yes, we can do that, we can do that, and then it turned out that that was my biggest disappointment, that specifically in that one, because that I remember vividly that she raised it on the first time, and on the second one, we said, oh, there's nothing we can do about it now. But overall, I thought that there were, the changes that they made were pretty good in general. I think it addresses a lot. Disability meaning more the mobility issue. There was a little bit of issues on the whether the distance between the platform and the train, you know, and the heights and what have you. And they said that they would see what they could do about it. didn't come to property either. But in general, what I saw in that red card, most of the comments, a lot of the comments we had made the original time had been taken into account. The seating arrangements, the wider aisles. I did like the part that they don't have to reopen all of the doors. If there's something, if they can open just one set of doors, like for example, you know, they, all the doors have to open in the train because somebody got stuck or something like that. They can just open the one door. Those are good improvements that I saw in general. My biggest disappointment, again, was that particular issue on the hearing impaired.
Okay, so sorry to cut you off for a minute. I'm going to let Carl and then Barbara go. Okay, just Carl. Carl?
I just wanted to comment that one of the things Ben had pointed out at the smart trip machine viewing was that there was no information that showed that $10 gets you both a card and preloaded value. And I noticed the software has been updated to do that.
As I keep looking whenever I go.
At least it
still says $10.
Oh, the two in Union Station say includes $5 card, $5 preload.
Oh, that's good.
So,
the system works.
Okay. So, any other comments about the series rail car visit? Do you have any comments from members of the public? Okay, yes. Please come forward.
My name is Kurt Ranchke, probably Yomi. I'm a pest. Great. I'm glad that you said what you said, because the thing is, in the summer of 2010, WMATA spoke to the Long-Term Projects Committee. I don't know how many members of the RAC were at that meeting, but I know you were, Frank. And Dave Alford and some of the members of the RAC and some of the members of the public who were there made a number of insightful points and were basically told, oh, the design has already been finalized. So this is the first time you've heard that. You heard it about the soft mock-up, now you've heard it about the hard mock-up. It's time for the RAC to figure out if there's a clear pattern of WMATA not really interacting or cooperating with riders. And this gets back to what you dealt with earlier in the evening. This isn't an isolated problem. This is WMATA being a very closed, insular organization, trying to isolate itself from outside thought, trying to isolate itself from outside opinions. And yes, I agree, you don't, sometimes bureaucrats don't want people going off half-cocked and answering things that haven't been vetted, but, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of being transparent and communicating. And Joseph, I see you nodding, thank you. This is something that the RAC needs to treat as a systematic problem, not a series of isolated incidents. It's something that the RAC really needs to look at as something that goes to the heart of what's wrong with WMATA today. It's not about rail cars, it's not about the RAC, it's not about any of these things in isolation. It's about the heart of how WMATA behaves as an organization. And I would ask you to consider that.
Great, thank you. Okay, so we're going to go on to the next agenda item, initial public hearing recap. I know a few of us attended the bus hearings, and I'm going to start with Barbara.
I missed the rail car visits, but I could go to the Alexandria hearing. I should say Shirlington. I'm Alexandria, but I went to Shirlington. Sorry. There were about a dozen people there, probably half a dozen staff people. Very calm proceeding as general, everything from somebody that had a list of 15 suggestions to changes to clusters that were in keeping with the spirit of what was being done, and notes were taken, and two people just had very minor questions. And then the one exception was somebody that was there strictly to talk about how much AA brush was, and because that's the forum they chose. But other than that, it was my first. It was an education plan. I think it's, I don't think care more than what's conceived by the attendance themselves. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I think it's fine.
I'm glad you're able to attend.
Thank you.
Before I talk about the student action, I do want to ask John Ward if they know about the new trail injury and if it will be rescheduled because it was supposed to occur on that Monday.
Yeah, what happened is we have to treat them as completely new public hearings. we can just like reschedule them this week. So the ad's gonna go in the paper, the first ad on Saturday, and then we cannot do it 15 days prior to that. So we're looking at rescheduling in the week of November 26th and 7th. But we will have confirmation in about 2 more days when the ad is due to the Washington Post.
All right, thank you.
That's Falls Church too, right?
Yes, New Carrollton, Falls Church, and Fort Town.
Thank you. I did attend with Kelsey, and she's not here right now. Her name is
Pat.
Hearing in Wade, and then also I attended the, it wasn't really a hearing, but the highest meeting in Cheverly. I guess, and they were the one in 4 days was very sparsely attended. I'll let Kelsey talk more about it. I have one concern that bugged me, and I know it only impacts a small number of people, but it does bug me, is the discontinuation of the group of bus groups in Ward 8 after 8 o'clock p.m. up the Jasper Road. That my students, I'm a teacher, I'm a middle school teacher in that area, this impacts my students. They take that route home from an after school programming, and the reason why Metro said that they're discontinuing that route, which is a legitimate reason, is that the bus is having problems with rocks, and after 8 o'clock p.m. and it costs, Jim was telling me it costs like $150,000 replacing bus windows. That is a lot of money.
From people throwing rocks at them?
From people just throwing rocks. My concern about that, though, is that this hearing took place in Ward 8, not near where the discontinuation will happen, and also at a time where the people who aren't going to be affected are actually on that bus riding it home. And so, I don't know that, I had a meeting with some AMC members who represent that area, who had not heard about the discontinuation. There are a lot of people over there who feel that they have not heard about it. I know that this makes a lot of sense. I am a little concerned about what it does to the people who it's a steep hill that they have to walk up, and sometimes those streetlights aren't on. Other than that, the people in Cheverly who are actually going to lose the bus, the W8, I think, the 74, are okay with losing that bus. They're fine with it. So I think the changes from the communities that I went to, North Ward 8 and Cheverly, most people seem to be okay with the changes. They feel that they may be necessary.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. There's actually a member of the press that was here earlier asking about that issue. Did she leave her name with you, John? Okay, so maybe we can have her follow up with you since you have some students and those people who are directly impacted by that route. I did send an email about that to my contacts in that area. The thing is, again, sometimes email is not the best way to reach people. The best thing is to go out and meet them where they're at. And so that's something that's going to have to happen on my side.
I think I read an article about
it was in the Washington Post.
Right.
Yeah. We have a follow-up article.
Oh, okay. Because you mentioned that they know that that's a short-term solution, and they really want to get at what's causing it so that they can have a bus there.
And so I was, along with Joseph, attended that meeting in Ward 8, and there weren't many people. I'd say there were probably maybe 8 or 10 people that testified. One of the things that, the comments were sort of, you know, what do you expect? I need my bus to show up on time. It's expensive. And so that's great. I'm glad that folks in the community were able to reiterate their concerns. What I liked about this meeting, and I had not seen before, and John and Lloyd, tell me if I was wrong, is that the director of the D.C. Department of Transportation was there. And so I liked the fact that he could see how WMATA is integrated with what D.C. government does and the issues that people have with Metro. Sometimes it's not just on Metro's plate, it's shared. So that was the first time I saw something like that. Sometimes they're in attendance, but that was the first time I saw the D.C. director at the table, and I greatly appreciated having him there at the table to hear people.
But can I also just say, because this reminds me, at the forum in Cheverly, Cheverly has an unofficial forum, the Deputy Director of Transportation for Prince George's County was there as well. So I like you, I think that that is a great way to incorporate folks on it.
And so, yes.
Just so you know, the Director of DDOT is actually a member of the Board of Directors.
That's right.
It's new.
You're right, he's new, but for some reason though, when I saw him there, I didn't associate him with Metro. I totally forgot that, but you're correct, I associated with him. And how you can see the DDOT is knowing and how they're not necessarily informing WMATA, and WMATA's not talking to DDOT. But anyway, keep that word. And yeah, you're totally right. So any other comments on the bus hearings? No. Okay, questions or comments on the RAC chair or AAC chair reports?
Can I just say one thing on my report?
Sure, go ahead.
Just on the basis of maybe one of the comments that we said earlier, concerning the Southern Hudson River House Service, AAC did put 19 recommendations, 20 recommendations, and we received 19 out of the 20 improvements that we did put in. So as far as WMATA listening, I know there was a comment, but I think I might say some of that issue with that. I also wanted to express that we're putting together a lighting survey that we put together on about 40 of the stations. Recommendations with that survey have already been forwarded to WMATA engineers. They're looking to put those recommendations together along with cost projections, see if we can implement increased lighting within the stations, what I would consider another improvement. We're tracking the bus stops through the 8 jurisdictions. We're putting together a list of recommendations when they should be completed, so we can track and give those improvements, and we're going to report that out to the board of directors in January. Another set of improvements that I see, that's a good thing. And then lastly, because of work that was done with the disabled community, particularly in members of my committee, WMATA was recognized by the transit industry on a nationwide basis at the AFTA conference in October, right? Yeah, for the Innovations Award and eligibility, and got very good recognition for a nationwide basis and a nationwide award, which is another set of accomplishments that WMATA has got to put forward, I think, because they've worked with the community and gotten input. So I understand that there are improvements that can be made with WMATA, but I just wanted to give another set of recommendations for things that are positive things that have happened. Lastly, I'll just also say that with the smarter cars, there was an issue with procurements. They weren't totally accessible. We pointed that out. WMATA agreed that they hadn't followed their own procurements. And rather than put the new machines out there and just say, you'll get them fixed when you get them fixed, they basically trotted those machines. And they got them fixed within 6 weeks. The machine going to be totally accessible by the 12th of November. They agreed that they did make a mistake. They're going to have the other machines, the older machines, replaced by the spring, so that you'll have accessible smart grid dispenser cards. You know, and another indication of where it wasn't perfect the way it was done initially, but we did get good response from WMATA. So I think that when you're saying that WMATA needs to make improvements, yes, they do. But when they make improvements, when they do things right, I think I want to put that side on the table also. So that's my statement.
Thanks. Pat, weren't you just quoted in the post
book saying something
similar?
Yeah,
I read an article
right,
here today.
Yeah. And I think that was similar to the smart cars.
Yeah.
You know, we certainly, and I'm not just saying that everything that was right, we certainly take them to task when we need to. But I think what's important is building that partnership, you know, as RAC is doing, as we try to do, so that when you work together, you can accomplish and get that goal. It's building that win-win situation that's the key. It's not always easy to do, but I think it helps make a difference.
Thanks. So it's now 8:30. We're going to go over by about 5 minutes. I have read open my portion. I know that Ben and Carl have some information to share with us. Ben?
Yeah, the airport accessibility and working group. We are going to be setting up a call with the DC Tourism Post. I have been in contact with them. They are gathering some data for us, so they'll be ready. But expect some sort of information on that in the very near future, probably hopefully by the end of this week. I don't know whether we might check the comments if I could, just coming up with some follow-up information, I think, from our Rush Plus conversation. You know, we were talking a lot about how bringing the Silver Line on board will result in further cuts to Orange and or Blue Line service that's currently there. That's something that I think we definitely need to talk to a lot about, because that's not something that the writing public has been prepared for. So I would welcome a discussion on that. Cara, I just wanted to reiterate some of the comments. We went off to the rail park slate. We had a discussion that I think would benefit the rest of the RAC, and that is talking about connections between DC and Virginia, especially on the bus, are very lacking. If you look at where the bus lines go, it seems like there's a barrier on the Potomac. And I think that's something that I at least would like to discuss, and I think you probably would as well. Integration of those two systems, I think, is something that we need to discuss. The other thing is the poll data that WMATA provided to us, much to its credit, but then there was sort of a caveat on that about, please don't put this on the website, or please don't release it further. I'd definitely like to revisit that. I think that's something that should be made public, and that was the idea behind it, is that we would put it on our website and make it public. So I'd like some sort of resolution on that. And just broader, I think another thing that we should discuss is the communication issue. We keep coming back to it over and over again. I think that deserves its own meeting. I mean, that should be an entire meeting of the RAC at one point, and having the communications people here to talk about how they perceive WMATA interaction with the public, I think, would be something we've skirted or danced around for so long. Why not address it full on?
Yeah. I just don't know. Thanks. Carl and then James. Okay, Carl and then James.
I would like to propose, in a constant, I think everyone always wants to see the body be as effective as possible. No one likes to waste their time. I'd like to propose a small working group to discuss if we can be using our time more effectively, or if the structure of the RAC with meetings and that sort of thing and our subcommittees is most effective for what we need. Unless there are any objections, I think I will probably make a motion, hearing objection. If anyone is interested in this topic, it would be great to hear from you.
Barbara, Ben, raise their hands.
Well, I mean, I'm interested. I'm just.
Yes, I'm interested.
Oh, sorry.
I think we should comment.
I mean, if you want to comment now, too.
I don't want to comment, but I'm interested.
Okay, great. Cool.
Wonderful.
Thanks. Starting next meeting, hopefully, thanks to the diligent efforts of John and Loida, we're going to be live streaming our meetings online, just like the board meetings. So
pressure.
Now all your. I asked if I could.
No, I'm not. No.
So now all your families, while they can't see you, can listen along.
James?
Madam Chair, I have a rhetorical question. And my rhetorical question is this. On January the 21st, 2013, President Obama is going to be sworn in, and that's also Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. My question is, why is Metro charging rush hour fares the whole day? And that's a rhetorical question. That's all. I'm just curious.
So that's one that I think staff will have to get back to us on. And it's also, the leadership team did ask for a briefing on the inauguration preparations. And I think, John, again, correct me if I'm wrong, staff thought that, I guess, perhaps since they did an admirable job last time, that maybe they didn't need as much input from us in that form of a fashion this time. Is that correct? Or things were basically already planned.
It went to the board before the, whenever it was, like, the operating plan for the inauguration is already on the board, so I'm not sure.
What
we could ask. What at that point there would be the input.
There's a whole discussion at the committee meeting last month. We forwarded the presentation to you guys in the audio so you can see it. I mean, it was fully vetted at the board level and they approved the plan then.
Okay, that would be useful, and I guess the only comment I'll have here is it would have been nice, though, if staff had come to us. One of the comments, I read things in the paper, and one of the things I was hoping, and I don't know if it's going to happen or not, I'm actually hoping that they sell the commemorative smart chip cards from the last one, but that was something I could have asked here.
They actually, just today, we put up an inauguration page.
Okay.
I mean, like, literally not long after the results were called, they have some information on the inauguration service that will be kind of responsive to that.
Okay, so we'll do that. Two more comments, and then we're going to conclude. Joseph and Barbara.
Well, I did just want to say that they did also create this new Twitter account, which we were told they were going to be one from our Twitter account. They actually opened on the inaugural Twitter account as well.
We're going to work on this, right, John? We're looking at having someone come in to talk to us about the online comment form.
Well, are we talking about, like, what happened with customer service? Is that...
With all the comments that come in, either electronically or...
They came, it's been years now. Right. Folks from customer service came, you know, that may be something to revisit.
I think that would be a great topic, and even if they have ideas on how, you know, if they get all the funding in the world, they want to maybe restructure how they receive comments or what they do with it, maybe where they're trying to go in the future. That's useful as well.
Real quick, I just wanted to comment about before the comment of seconding your motion. I just wanted to say minutes I don't think are necessary for that. However, I just wanted to keep some sort of track because I don't want people coming in here and then, and I wanted to move. I wanted to make a decision on that, but obviously that's not for today. But that was just the reasoning why I seconded your motion. So that can be.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for your time. It's 8:37 p.m. and that concludes our meeting.